This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Marco Contreras lived a nightmare. He was a hospital security guard working the graveyard shift in Bellflower, California. One day, after a man was shot at a gas station in nearby Compton, Contreras was accused of the crime. Despite four witnesses testifying to his innocence, he was convicted of attempted murder and armed robbery. Contreras would spend the rest of his life in prison. After many years, the Loyola Law School Project for the Innocent took up his case. They pushed for a new investigation. LA authorities found and arrested the real perpetrators, and last month, 20 years after he went to prison, Marco Contreras walked away free. That story made headlines, but it's just one of many. According to the National Registry of Exonerations, 2,000 people have been exonerated since 1989. Men of color are disproportionately victims of the injustice. Today, from our partners at San Quentin Radio, formerly the San Quentin Prison Report, we're hearing an exoneration story told from the inside out.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free, I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
I mean, once you're in the cell, you're listening.
From San Quentin Radio, Greg Eskridge has the story of one of them, Guy Miles.
I remember receiving a letter from my mother in 2003 telling me my daughter was pregnant. That letter really hurt me, almost brought tears to my eyes. For one, I should have been out there with my daughter, raising her, showing her the right way. And two, I'm sitting here in prison for a crime I didn't commit.
It all started in 1996. Guy Miles was living in Las Vegas on probation for robbery. He made his regular visit to his probation officer. That visit would become a nightmare for him and his family.
They called me, told me to come report. They arrest me and tell me a warrant's been issued for my arrest in Orange County. I'm like, for Orange County? I know I ain't never been to Orange County, so it was kind of tripping me out. Orange County would put a warrant out for me.
The warrant accused him of robbery. Next thing he knew, he was being escorted to his house in the back of a police car.
They took me to my house, raided my house, told me it was a robbery, all this, they were looking for evidence. So I'm like, damn, okay, they kind of taking it far if they wanted a violation out of me. You know, this is my thinking now, that they really just wanted me for being in Vegas, a violation. But end up taking me to Orange County, arrested me, and there it is.
It was baffling. He'd never been to Orange County in his life.
It was crazy, man. It was like, you know, it's a feeling that was, I don't never want to feel again. It was, you know, here they are. It's like grabbing you. If you ever been, you know, you never been to Mississippi, they grab you, tell you got a robbery in Mississippi, a state you never been to before. That's how it was with me in Orange County. Took me to Orange County, never been to Orange County, so I knew I ain't never did a robbery out there. But it was a feeling.
It's a common story, and one that is worse for men of color. According to the data collected by the Innocence Project, misidentification by witnesses is the number one cause of innocent people being convicted of crimes, especially when the witnesses are from different ethnic groups. And that's what happened to Miles.
Well, they had three witnesses that said they picked me out in identification. But when we got to trial, when we actually got to court, there were two. The other one said that when he looked at me, he said that that wasn't me. One of the witnesses who were supposedly identified me got off the stand, came down to the defense table and asked me to stand up. So I stood up, turned around for her, talked to her, and she stated to the DA, that's not him.
The witness was a white woman who had been robbed. She couldn't identify him the first time when asked to do so, and Miles felt a sense of relief because he knew he was innocent.
DA took her outside, talked to her, brought her back in, put her on the stand and asked her, do you see the person who robbed you? She pointed at me and said it was me. After that, my attorney cross-examined her and asked her what changed her mind from the time she was in the courtroom saying that it wasn't me till the time the DA took her outside. She said the DA showed her a booking photo and asked me was I the same person. She told them, yeah.
The booking photo only identified him as the person who was accused of the crime, not the person who actually committed it. So for Miles and his family, the nightmare just kept on going.
I had probably 20 to 30 people every court date. Everybody couldn't believe it because they knew I was living in Vegas at the time this happened. And it was just, you know, it was tears in the audience every day because they couldn't believe it. And my mother being a minister, you know, she's a pretty fair lady. So, you know, she's been on jury trials and she believed in the system. So she just believed that everything was going to work out, you know. If the DA didn't handle it, then the jury would.
But that wasn't the case.
You know, the first 6 months of me fighting my case, I said, okay, they're going to figure it out. They're going to let me go, you know. But when it kept going on, and the day of, you know, we picked a jury, it was like, okay, this is real. This is going down, you know. So buckle up. Let me get ready because I know you're going to take me on a hell of a ride. So, you know, to pick the jury, seen this jury, and I just looked like, oh, yeah, no matter what kind of defense I put up, I'm going to be guilty.
Miles says that he did not have a jury of his peers. In fact, he had an all-white jury panel, and it didn't take them long to seal his fate.
I kind of already knew it. I just looked at the jury. They couldn't look at me. So I knew right then and there they was going to find me guilty. But when I actually heard the words, you know, it was like playing over and over in my head, guilty, guilty, guilty. Man, it was crazy. My mother fell out. They took her to the hospital. You know, I wasn't even really concerned about the verdict at that time. When I heard about my mom, my lawyer came and told me about my mother. I was more concerned about her than my actual being found guilty, you know. So, but afterwards, man, it was wild, man. It was wild.
Miles got sentenced to 75 years to life. He went to prison to begin serving his time, but he knew he was an innocent man, and he vowed to never give up.
Man, I'm gonna fight this. I already know that if I just keep fighting, stay hopeful, I know this case is gonna be reversed, or it's gonna be thrown out, or they're gonna find out I didn't do it. And, you know, it's just something's gonna happen. The door's gonna open, and I'm just gonna walk right out.
During his incarceration, Miles came across some of the men who actually committed this crime. These men knew an innocent man was serving a life sentence for their actions and wanted to clear his name. He then contacted the Innocence Project and explained the situation, and in 2003, they picked up his case.
The tears came out of my eyes. It was like, wow, you know, I've been writing all these different organizations, you know, and I write the Innocent Project, and finally somebody's like listening, like, okay, well, it may be something here. Let's look into this case. I knew I had a shot.
And he was right. He did have a shot. It finally came together in 2016.
I was going down to the payphone, you know, like normally, going to make my regular phone call and, you know, call my daughter. And, you know, as soon as she picked up the phone, she's yelling and screaming like, Dad, you here? You here? I was like, here what? You coming home? So it was like, what? What are you talking about? And she told me they ruled on my case. My case was reversed and sentence vacated. I was like, who you hear that from? She's like, your lawyer called us and told us that, you know, it's over with. It's done. And, you know, she started crying and, you know, I tried to hold back and a couple of tears dropped, but, you know, it was a beautiful feeling. It was like, wow. You know, she just kept on saying, Dad, you coming home, you coming home, you coming home. So couldn't sleep for the next couple of nights, you know.
The nightmare was almost over for Miles and his family. Miles says he's not bitter about the whole situation and that he's just ready to get back to his family and begin to rebuild their lives together. He's really excited, but also a little nervous.
It's always that anxiety of being gone 19 years, starting fresh again, going to the streets, you know, but thank God I got a family and support out there. So the transition should be a little better than if I didn't have that.
After being locked up for such a long time, what's the first thing someone might want to do? I actually want to go to the beach, stand on the sand barefooted, inhale the ocean air, and thank God for my freedom. But Miles has other ideas.
Man, a bath. Taking a nice, hot bath. And, you know, just go get my grandkids, chill with them, and, you know, big dinner, you know, and just laugh, cheer, and have fun, and, you know, that's about it. That's the first thing I want to do when I get home.
The idea of what home is can change after being inside for a long time. You build relationships with people who really become important to you, almost like family. And that can really be hard to leave behind, even though you're finally getting ready to be free.
That's the hard part, because you meet a lot of good people in here, and you know, just knowing that you're on your way out the door, you know, it's like, okay, you're leaving behind some solid dudes. Dudes you know you're not gonna see on the streets again.
From San Quentin Radio, I'm Greg Eskridge.